Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the UBS Conversations podcast channel. Our conversation today will revisit behavioral finance as we will explore the behavior of action bias, including a look at when it might and might not make sense for one to adjust or shift their investment approach, along with strategies to consider that can protect against the behavior of action bias. So joining us for the conversation today from the UBS Chief Investment Office, glad to welcome Justin Waring, Senior Total Wealth Strategist, as well as Katie Williams, Discovery Strategist. We're also fortunate to have with us today on the line from our partners at Transamerica, Mark Halloran. Mark is a Managing Director and serves as head of business development for individual markets with the firm. So with that up front, Justin, Katie, Mark, I do want to thank you for spending some time today with our listeners, our clients. Looking forward to diving into this topic with you all and hearing your insights. So welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Pleased to be here.
Absolutely. So a lot to cover during today's conversation, so let's get right into it. And to start, Justin, I'll simply ask, how do you think about or define action bias? Can you maybe expand a bit on what action bias is and when it might occur?
Yeah, thank you again for having us, Dan. When we think about action bias, it's really that urge that you get to do something in response to new information. So even when we know that we don't have control over a situation, action bias tells us that it's an instinctive intuition that tells us that taking action in response to the information is always better than inaction, even if we don't have control or even if we don't fully understand what the consequences are going to be. It's something that we respond to automatically without really rational thought kicking in. And one example that comes up, you know, is if you're tending goal during a penalty kick in a soccer game, you know, your intuition tells you to dive to one corner of the net or the other, when statistically probably the best way to guard the goal is to stand in place, because a lot of penalty kickers will kick you right down the middle. And but you kind of feel like you might look like a fool if you don't at least stretch to try to grab the shots that go towards the corner of the net. Another example would be, you know, you're sitting in traffic and you're very frustrated with the situation that you're stuck in, and it feels like it might be a good idea to change lanes or honk the horn or do all kinds of other things that aren't going to necessarily get you there any faster. But just sitting there and accepting the situation also feels, it feels like you're not really doing the right thing. You know what I mean?
This whole notion that the action bias is an intuitive response is an important thing to keep in mind, because it's quick thinking, right? It's something that has developed over a millennia that actually kept our species alive. It kept us out of dangerous situations or helped us understand how to react to dangerous situations. And that's important from the standpoint of survival in a dangerous world. But when you translate that to the investment world, well, action bias is actually probably one of the most one of the biases that's most responsible for underperformance on the individual investor side, and most frequently when it's related to the anticipation or the fear of a loss, right? So, for example, you know, DelBar has been doing this study for 25 years, and they look at the investor's behavior and over market conditions and generally benchmark them to indices and so forth and compare investor performances to indices. Well, if you look at the last 25 years, nearly 70% of all losses in investor portfolios took place during crisis periods. So whether that was a housing crisis, whether that was some other market crash or something, that's when we really want to take action. But in line with the title of this program, sometimes it's just better to sit and think and then move on.
Absolutely. And building off of this, Mark, to welcome you into the conversation as far as when it makes sense for one to adjust or even shift their investment approach, how can we as investors go about identifying catalysts that in fact create a legitimate or perhaps even justified need to change one strategy or approach?
Always start with a plan. The notion of what, when I should switch my strategy really comes down to what's changed in my life. Have my goals changed? If I have a goals-based plan, whether that's for retirement, whether that's for savings for a house, savings for education, or the like, that should be a well-constructed portfolio working with an advisor that's designed to get me to that objective. Well, if that objective changes, then I might want to revisit my strategy. But if a market condition is asking me to look at my portfolio, but my goals haven't changed, then it's time to stop. Then it's time to pause and reflect.
When you have a well-diversified portfolio, it is going to often be resilient to most market shocks, because market shocks will tend to affect a single company or a single sector of the economy or even a single market or a single country's economy. But very rarely, only during like the worst case bear markets, will your portfolio have to deal with losses across the whole portfolio. And those will happen every several years, but they'll only last, a couple of months. And so one thing to remember is that, on average, bear markets, which is a 20% drop in the S&P 500 or greater, has happened about every 7 years. And most of the time, we're fully recovered within 3 years of the beginning of a bear market. And so what we want to build is a strategy and a portfolio that's resilient to these market shocks, because we know that there will be shocks along the way. And then when we operate from that position of strength, it's much more clear to us which things we need to respond to and which things we can allow to be untouched.
So with that, Katie, to welcome you into the conversation, can you maybe share with us some strategies to implement that protect against action bias?
Definitely. Actually, this is in a continuation of what Justin was just saying and what Mark had mentioned about the action bias response being instinctual almost in all of us. But in actuality, the antidote to this knee-jerk instinctual reaction that Mark mentioned is control. And when we feel in control of a situation and when we feel that we understand what is happening, then we don't have this reaction. And so, as Justin mentioned regarding diversification, we have to flip our narrative and say market volatility is going to happen. It's not a question of if it's going to happen, it's when. And when we understand that, then we can create contingency plans of how to react or behave in times of uncertainty. So the first thing we can do is work with our advisor to stress test not only our plan and our portfolio. So we know how we'll have some predictability in terms of market or reaction. But the second thing you can do, and really where probably most people find the largest peace of mind, is building a liquidity strategy. There, as Justin mentioned, there are a lot of disruptions that happen in the market. But if we're able to create what we call a liquidity portfolio that will provide for us continuing income, so all of our needs are met, all our expenses are covered, all of our income remains from, let's say, a 3 to 5 year period, then we know we can recover and survive through any market disruption period. Now, that 3 to 5 year period comes from the fact that if we've studied bear markets throughout history, and most portfolios will recover in that time frame. So therefore, having that cash reserve to help you sleep at night is going to give you the peace of mind to say, you know what? I don't have to worry about a fear response. I can look for opportunity. So what's in those liquidity portfolios? Well, obviously cash, bonds, fixed income, but also things like a pension income, social security checks, even annuities. And I know this is something that Mark is very familiar with, and how incorporating those vehicles into your portfolio can bring you that peace of mind.
Absolutely, Katie. And, it's an interesting phenomenon. Guarantees give us comfort, right? And insurance companies, through uses such as annuities, and because of the laws of large numbers that we deal with and so forth, and our ability to hedge on an institutional level, can't provide those kinds of guarantees, whether it's through just a annuitization or whether it's through something called an income benefit. But these things provide guaranteed forms of cash flow or income. There's other types of annuities as well that provide, returns of principal. And those are the kinds of things where incorporated properly during those times of crisis in particular, and in particular looking at, individuals that are in the early parts of retirement or just before retirement, you have to be concerned about things like sequence of returns. I mean, if you retire into a down moving market, well, that could have a profound effect on your ability to draw from your investments. So walking into those situations, having knowledge that those conditions can't exist, and putting things in place such as variable annuities with income benefits or other sorts of guarantees can be very useful. Interestingly, we also see that within a variable annuity, you have variable investments. You have equity and income investments similar to mutual funds. But if you look at the behavior of an average mutual fund investor and their holding periods versus the sub-accounts within variable annuities, there's a significant difference in holding periods, whereas a mutual fund might be 2 or 3 years, and that's probably being generous. Holding periods within annuities tend to be much longer, several years past that. And a lot of that has to do, frankly, with how I view that investment and its utility, and then what it offers me in terms of, we'll call it, again, that comfort of a guarantee.
Yeah, it's interesting to look at investor behavior when they have immediate and direct access to the investment versus when it's in a form that is explicitly intended for long-term investment. So think about the difference of how people treat their taxable brokerage accounts versus their retirement accounts. They tend to be slightly better behaved in their retirement accounts, knowing that they're not going to need to touch that part of their wealth for several decades does tend to help protect them against action bias. Now, they're still poorly, you know, on average, investor behavior tends to be poor across all investments, but it's interesting to see that, you know, the ability to trade is a temptation at all times. And it's one of the things I think is very interesting. You know, we'll look at exchange traded funds are traded all day throughout the day. You can see every single tick moment by moment. And you have, you know, the very highest level of liquidity you could possibly ask for, which I think is more of a burden than a gift, because most of the time you're investing for decades, and whether you have to wait till the end of the day to sell or not is not really a major issue. And then the same thing goes for private investments, you know, where you're locking up your investment for maybe up to 10 years or 10 to 15 years in some situations. You don't have access to the capital. You don't really have the choice of liquidating on a whim, you know, in response to market reactions. And as a result, you're far more likely to get the full investment return of the fund rather than a fraction of it as a result of poor investor behavior.
So as we begin to close out our conversation for today, I do want to thank Justin, Mark, Katie for the insights. And of course, the conversation doesn't end here. We do, of course, encourage our clients of UBS to have follow-up conversations with your UBS financial advisor. But Justin, Mark, Katie do want to give you an opportunity to provide our listeners, our clients, with any final thoughts or takeaways around this topic. Justin, beginning with you.
Whenever we think about action bias, The quote that most comes to mind for me is the serenity prayer. To grant me the serenity to accept the things I can't change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I think that action bias really is about the wisdom of knowing the difference between what things should prompt me to change my goal or my strategy or my plan, and what things do I already have resilience to. And this is something that the news is constantly trying to trick you into thinking that things are important and urgent. And having a financial advisor with whom you can discuss these issues and understand how they affect you personally can be really incredibly valuable to make sure that you get the full potential return of your portfolio, as opposed to a portion of it as a result of changing horses midstream.
You know, working with an advisor is paramount in my view, particularly in such a complex world that we live in today, and having a plan that works for you and for your goals makes sense. And I would say the final thing is that, again, we mentioned that action bias is an intuitive response, right? And the behaviors, we'll talk about something called system one and system two thinking, or fast and slow thinking. And what Justin and Katie have been talking about a lot today is it's more often time that we need to pause to get into that system two. So whereas system one or intuition, that's a knee-jerk response, the system two thinking, the slow thinking, it's a learned behavior, but it can be learned. But working with an advisor can actually help accelerate that learning, because that's the person that will help us to pause, It'll help us to remind ourselves of what the objectives that we had in mind were, and then how we constructed a portfolio to face off against things that are happening sitting right in front of us as well.
Yeah, Mark, couldn't have said it better. I think what I tell clients a lot is, you know, in that moment, number one, the most important thing you can do is recognize that you're starting this spiral, that you're starting into a reactionary mode. And just by understanding that, you're going to add some objectivity to the moment. And I think the question becomes, giving equal time and energy to what if I did nothing in this moment? Because you're spending a lot of energy thinking, I have to do something. But what if I didn't do anything? But what I do think is the most important thing to do is just pick up the phone and call your financial advisor. Ask them, tell them, I'm nervous, I'm scared, I don't know what I should make of this headline. That will usually help you put you on a path towards a more objective discussion in regards to what's most important to you and the path you're on to achieve those goals.
Well, Katie, Mark, Justin, very valuable guidance, takeaways to leave there for our listeners, especially our clients of UBS listening in. So I do want to thank you all for spending some time with us today here on UBS Conversations. And I do look forward to perhaps having a follow-up conversation on this topic, among others within the behavioral finance space.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliates. The views and opinions expressed in this material by external guest speakers are those of the author, speaker, and are not those of UBS, its subsidiaries, or affiliates. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over the content of this material or any claims, losses, or damages arising from the use or reliance of all or any part thereof. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient, and is published for informational purposes only. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.